Thursday, February 16th, we woke up at 5:30. That is the pattern of these days. And then after a long time, dropped off into a restless, fitful half-sleep, waking at 8, not refreshed. I knew I would have to miss Spanish, or else face the busy afternoon with no hairdo. Reluctantly, I asked Ashton to phone La Profesora and say I wouldn't be there. Then to Jean-Louise, with my Mexican straw bag, practically my trademark, and Liz in tow, give me the scenario for the afternoon. I spent my time in the chair, reading the guest list for all the occasions, the background on the Hart Award winner of the year, the agenda for the beautification meeting, trying to fit in my mind all the things I wanted to say to each guest, and reading over my little speech cards. Then back at the White House, put on my pretty red wool, and went down to the theater to meet Marie Mushrow, beautiful, young, so very much alive. She was the American Heart Association's Distinguished Service Award winner for the year. And my few little words of introduction over TV told a story of one of man's successes. Born with two holes in her heart, she was given 6 months to live, and if she survived, would probably be an invalid. So she was for a good many years. And then medical research caught up with her. At 14, a piece of machinery had been invented which made it possible for her to have a heart operation from which she recovered. And she'd gone on to win her state's beauty crown, to get an education, and to work for the Heart Association, making more than 250 speeches and traveling 12,000 miles for Heart Association events. I hope they sent some heart volunteers on their way saying, "Me too, I helped." It was a useful thing for a First Lady to do, and I was proud to be a part of it. Mary Lasker was there watching, and I took her back upstairs with me to rest a bit while I went over the minutes for the beautification meeting. And then together we went back to the theater at 3 o'clock, where nearly all the members of the committee were in their seats, except our kingpin member, Stu Udall, so I had to preside. Brooke Astor had come down, bless her, and Kay Graham, and Katie Lockheim, and Nat Owings, Adam Rumashofsky, and Lawrence Rockefeller with Mary, and Polly Shackleton, and Walter Washington was down from New York. Libby Rowe was still convalescing. I introduced the new members, Mr. Pollock, the President's advisor for National Capital Affairs, replacing Charles Horsky, who, thank goodness, is going to stay with us in an advisory capacity, and Mrs. Clyde Romig for the National Capital Garden Clubs. And I told them briefly about attending the memorial service for Stephen Currier, who left us a wonderful legacy for his brief period on the committee. And then I introduced Bill Walton to narrate the slides that the Fine Arts Commission had produced on the appearance of parking in the Capitol and on street furniture. And then Bill Schmidt, one of the top men in GSA, who told us their plans for spring landscaping around government buildings in Washington. In these 2 years, the federal establishment has made some creditable strides in making our capital more beautiful, and after all, it is the biggest landlord. And then we had a film, Beware the Wind, about air pollution. About 7 minutes before it was over, I was simply scared to death. When it was over, I was still scared, but hopeful. It was a good committee meeting, but I missed the give and take of questions and answers, and I wish we had had some report, some sizable gift, or in danger of losing momentum. Then I invited them all up to the East Room for the reception honoring the Citizens Advisory Committee on Recreation and Natural Beauty, of which Lawrence is the chairman. Sometime during the morning, there was a 10-minute interlude in the Jacqueline Kennedy Garden to receive a wheelbarrow full of seeds to be used in district school grounds and public housing projects and city parks from some man who had simply heard about the program and wanted to help. And then there was the big event of the day, the reception at 4:30 in the East Room. As I entered, honorees, the Citizens Advisory Committee on Recreation and Natural Beauty, were seated to my right in the front row, and on my left were the award winners. I went straight to the podium and read my little speech, using a letter from a little boy to set the tone for the way people feel about natural beauty, or at least I do. This little boy in Connecticut had written, "Dear Mrs. Johnson, I have written to you last Easter, and I offered you to come to Connecticut, but Lucy's wedding had all of your time. I wish you could come up this spring and go on that old stagecoach road that I mentioned in my letter. I have been there recently, and I have seen a new family of beavers. The maple sap will be running pretty soon, and the maple trees will be tapped. I can probably get you some real maple syrup freshly made. I am all for your beautification plan. The offer is still okay to come. I'll be waiting for a reply. Yours truly, Mike Waldron. So that's what a lot of folks of the land want, children and grown-ups. But the biggest decision in the land now concerns our highways, the greatest public works program of any civilization, bigger than the pyramids of Egypt or the great public monuments of Rome. And our challenge is to build them in harmony with our landscape and a pleasant asset to our lives. If we miss now, we miss something big. Then I introduced Alan Boyd. Liz had jokingly said I could introduce him as, "This is the man with the monkey on his back," but I used some fine words instead, that he was the one to whom millions of us looked for strong and creative attention to these challenges. Then Alan Boyd saluted past accomplishments in highway beauty by handing out citations to 7 winners who'd made our highways more beautiful, ranging from New Jersey to California and Wisconsin to Texas, for such diverse things as preserving a view of the Berkshire Mountains and a lake, and a particularly well-planned rest area as you approach Mackinac Island on Interstate 75 in Michigan, and the planting of wildflowers on the right-of-way near Yoakum, Texas, DeWitt's project. I handed out the citations while many pictures were taken, which I hope will be used back home and stir up others to go out and do more. Once again, how funny it is that the press are good when they're taking pictures of some project you're fighting for, and they're bad when they're taking pictures of you going about your own private enjoyment. Alan had described an annual series of awards which would begin next January for aesthetics in highway construction. This was just the token, the kickoff, sort of thing that will be honored. What a two we Americans have made of the award system. But I know it helps. Then I introduced Lawrence Rockefeller, who spoke for the Citizens Advisory Committee, and as always, did the gracious thing of giving credit to the president, citing his Michigan speech, being factual about the obstacles and pitfalls, but congratulating all of us on the achievements and the new spirit in the land. And then I asked everybody to come into the Blue Room so I could meet them, and then we'd have refreshments in the state dining room. Once in the Blue Room, suddenly there was Lyndon by my side. How grateful I am to him for being a part of the things that mean a lot to me. His presence makes all the difference. The Citizens Advisory Committee were practically 100% present, and they range from Ed Bacon, who's remade the face of Philadelphia in the last 20 years, to DeWitt Greer of Austin, and Harry Weiss of Chicago, and 2 women members, one a legislator from Atlanta. The whole cross-section of conservationists passed in front of us. The Wilderness Society, the Audubon Society, roadside councils from lots of states, the International Shade Tree Conference, and of course all sort of representatives from garden clubs, including men's garden clubs, Gordon Gray from the National Trust for Historic Preservations, and of course the Sierra Society. That highly important segment, the Congress, was not as well represented as I would have liked. Senator Greening and Senator Jackson had accepted. I've forgotten whether I saw them, but I well remember seeing Jim Wright and Ray Roberts, whose presence I appreciated, and 2 or 3 other congressmen I didn't know well. And Steve Young and Ed Muskie were there, but not as many of the members from the appropriate committees as we would hope. Besides Alan Boyd, there were Secretaries Freeman and John Gardner, and all sorts of representatives of road building and of the Wilderness Club. I'd asked my committee to act as hosts and make everybody feel at home. And as soon as the receiving line was over, I too went into the state dining room while Lyndon left for his office and mixed with the guests, picking up invitations to speak and, very pleasantly, some warm expressions on my little talk today. When that happens more than 4 or 5 times, I almost believe it was good. I'd asked Lawrence and Mary Rockefeller and Conrad Worth and his wife to meet me on the second floor, and a little past 6, the 5 of us settled up there for a quiet drink and a little resume of the state of affairs in conservation. And then Lawrence Rockefeller, that marvelous combination of efficient executive and kind gentleman, said, "Now, Lady Bird, we want to do anything we can to help. Tell us about the park." And I told them about my telegram from John Ben Shepherd asking for Conrad Worth's address, saying that he hoped he could get Conrad Wirth and the appropriate person from the National Park Service to come down to Johnson City on Tuesday to meet with the state park people and with him and start making those long-awaited things permanent plans. Conrad Wirth wasn't sure he could make it that quick. If not, how soon? I gave him John Bent's name and address, suggested that he phone him, said that I was going to phone Mr. Charles Kruger and probably Douglas Hubbard of the National Park Service. And so I felt that slowly but really, step by step, we were making progress. Lart said they'd love for me to come to Keneal Bay any time. I said maybe I could sometime the last 2 weeks in March if I worked hard enough and felt I'd made any progress so I could relax without any feeling of being a slacker. They left a little before 7, and I phoned Dr. Hurst, who was our house guest, asking him to play a game of bowling with me. He'd love to. But by the time he got to the second floor, I'd had a call from Lyndon, who wanted us to swim with him. So Dr. Hurst and I went down there. I couldn't swim with a $9 hairdo all fresh. So the two of us just sat and talked while Lyndon and Bob Fleming and Tom Johnson and George Christian had a long swim, and I had that feeling of satisfaction at getting what I wanted, Lyndon to take exercise. Willis left to make a speech, I think to the College of Cardiologists, about 8 o'clock, and I went upstairs to work. And after a surprisingly long time during which they swam, Lyndon and the other three joined us for a late dinner. And then I had a massage and was in bed with my book before 12. The present one is Elia Kazan's The Arrangement. Too ugly and depressing to like, and too well written to toss aside. I had that good feeling about the day that whether I'd budged an inch or not, I'd tried just as hard as I could.